Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Chaye Sarah. This week, Rabbi Howard Marcos discusses Chaye Sarah. Rabbi Howard Marcos is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Howard Marcos.
Thank you, Larry. The United States of America was visited recently by a shocking event that has left a plethora of difficult emotions in its wake. The election of Donald Trump as president is for many of us a rather difficult pill to swallow. Still, considering that this podcast is designed for people who wish to learn Torah, I will endeavor to do just that, learn Torah with you while acknowledging the constant presence of this major bit of news, which has not as yet retreated from the general world psyche. There are two stories told in the parasha of Chaye Sarah which find biblical characters entering into critical negotiations. Abraham must purchase land in Hebron from a fellow named Ephron ben Tsochar, where he will be able to bury his beloved wife Sarah. And Abraham's servant engages with Lavan to arrange the terms under which his sister Rivka can marry Yitzchak, son of Abraham. In each case, the negotiations are reported in great detail in our Torah text, leaving us with very little to stimulate our imagination. And yet, it seems that what might be seen as a simple deal struck each time between two able and willing partners, the expanded stories that have emerged from these two episodes, especially those offered by some of our Midrashim and medieval commentators, have portrayed one of the negotiators in a what I suggest is an undeserved negative light. In our time together today, I would like to challenge the suggestion that Ephron and Lavan were scoundrels with evil intentions, and instead encourage us all to try to interpret the text through the lens of the Mishnah in Avot, in which Yehoshua ben Prachia teaches us, Yehoshua ben Prachia Omer, Aselecha Rav, Ukenelecha Chaver, Veheve Dan et Kol Ha'adam Bechaf Zechut. Yehoshua ben Prachia used to say, get yourself a teacher, acquire a companion, and give everyone the benefit of the doubt. Our everyone today includes these two biblical characters, Ephron and Lavan. They were both well-meaning men who, I believe, at least according to my understanding of the simple meaning, the pshat of the text, engaged in fair and honest negotiations with Avraham and his emissary respectively, in spite of the attempt by some of our commentators to convince us otherwise. So let's begin with Ephron ben Tsochar, the owner of the area of Hebron called Me'arat HaMachpelah. You recall that following the death of Sarah, a distraught Avraham goes to the children of Chet with the intention of paying full price, kesef male, as the Torah tells us, for the place in which he will bury Sarah. In the presence of many of the townspeople, Ephron takes upon himself the task of negotiating a deal with Avraham. Our text is quite clear in its description of the exchange. Shma'eni, hasadeh natati lach, v'hame'ara asher bo lecha netatiha, le'enei v'nei ami netatiha lach, kivor meitecha. Hear me, says Ephron. I give you the field, and I give you the cave that is in it. I give it to you in the presence of my people. Bury your dead. Ephron is simply offering Avraham a plot of land, a sadeh, and a cave, a me'ara, found on that lot for the purpose of burying his loved one. At first, he's even offering the area at no charge. But Avraham would have none of that. He is insisting on purchasing the land so that no one might think that he is taking advantage of Ephron and the people of Chet. Can we call them Chetians? No, I'm pretty sure that they're called Hittites. Anyway, when asked by our patriarch for a fair price that he can pay for this piece of property, Ephron, a reasonable businessman, responds directly to the question with a precise figure. Eretz arba me'ot shekel kesef beini uveincha mahi. A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver. What is that between you and me? was 400 silver shekels an offensively exorbitant price, as some of the commentaries wish to have us believe? Or was it the going rate for a piece of real estate of this kind? There are those who wish to deviate from a neutral position on this question with the intention of casting Ephron in a negative light. For example, in Bereishit Rabbah, one of the oldest midrashim in our Jewish literature, one noteworthy comment hints to its readers that Ephron was quite keen about asking a very high price for the plot of land. Utilizing a verse from Mishlei, Proverbs 28:22, the midrash tells us, Nivhal lahon ish ra'ayin, a miserly man runs after wealth. Ze Ephron ben Sochar, shehichnis ayin ra b'mamono shel Avraham. This, says the Midrash, is Ephron ben Sochar, who injected ill will into the financial interaction with Avraham. The second half of the verse in Mishlei reads, Velo yeda ki cheser yevoenu. He doesn't realize that loss will overtake it, it being understood as the wealth mentioned in the first half of the verse. And the Midrash concludes, what is Ephron's loss? What is the Cheser? The Torah withdrew one of the letters in his name. If you look at the Torah text in which Ephron's name is mentioned at the time of the conclusion of this deal, you can find it, that it reads, Vayishkol Avraham le'Ephron, Eta kesef asher diber be'oznei v'nechet arba me'ot shekel kesef. Avraham paid out to Ephron the money that he had named in earshot of the Hittites, 400 shekels of silver. And the spelling of Ephron's name is different in this verse. It is spelled without a vav. It's ayin pei resh nun instead of ayin pei resh vav nun. This alternative spelling is called chaser in Hebrew, identified with the word chaser from the verse in Mishlei. We often translate chaser when talking about spelling in the Torah as defective, leaving us with the rabbinic opinion that this defective spelling hints to the idea that Ephron was defective in the way that he negotiated this sale with Avraham in charging him way too much for the piece of land. I challenge this position taken by some of our commentators. I say that the terms were absolutely fine, and I would like to tell you why I think that is the case. First of all, without addressing the complicated story itself in chapter 20 of the book of Bereishit, in which Avraham claims that his wife Sarah is actually his sister, the text reports that there was a monetary exchange that took place between Avimelech, king of Gerar, and our patriarch Avraham. In chapter 20, verse 26, we are told, Ulesara amar, hine natati elef kesef le'achich. Avimelech says to Sarah, I herewith give your brother, referring to Avraham in a somewhat cynical manner, 1,000 pieces of silver. Onkelos, in his Aramaic translation of this amount, calls it elef sla'in dichesaf, 1,000 sellas of silver, giving it a specific weight leading to a specific value. He also translates the 400 shekels of silver in our section of the Torah as arbe mea sla'in dichsaf, 400 sellas of silver, suggesting that Avimelech's payment to Avraham was 2.5 times the amount which was given from Avraham to Ephron, suggesting that the amount that Avraham paid for Me'arat HaMachpelah was indeed within the bounds of a reasonable commercial transaction. Not only that, but there have been documents discovered recently in the last century in the ancient city of Ugarit in northwestern Syria, which record real estate deals from around the 14th century BCE, in which the purchase price is, get this, 400 shekels of silver. And if Avraham is thought to have lived in this same area close to Ugarit around the same time in which these Ugaritic documents were written, give or take a couple hundred of years, then we might have confirmation that the recorded transaction between Avraham and Ephron describes a fair and congenial negotiation between two people who want to conclude a deal that is first and foremost beneficial to both parties, a goal which they succeed in reaching as the money is transferred to Ephron and Sarah receives a proper burial, both elements recorded faithfully in our text. This is how I believe that we might understand this episode of our Torah, giving Ephron the benefit of the doubt in his dealings with Avraham Avinu. Now, I would like to move to the other story in Parshat Chayei Sarah, for which the idea of giving the benefit of the doubt comes into play, namely the exchange between Avraham's servant, sent to Aram Naharaim to find a suitable mate for his charge Yitzchak, and Lavan, son of Betuel, brother of Rivkah, who ultimately becomes the wife of Yitzchak. The servant meets Rivkah at a well and is immediately impressed by the way she looks after him and his camels. He fully believes that he has found what he is looking for and would like to meet the family to seal the deal and bring Rivkah back to Canaan so that she can marry Yitzchak. The story continues. Vatarotz ha-na'ara vatageid levet imah kadvarim ha'ele. Ulrivkah ach ushimo Lavan. Vayarotz Lavan el ha'ish ha-chutza el ha'ayin. The maiden ran and told all this to her mother's household. Now Rivkah had a brother whose name was Lavan. Lavan ran out to the man at the spring. The simple understanding of this text, the pshat, is that as a result of Rivka's exciting report of what happened to her at the well, that she met some guy whom she looked after and whose camels she watered, on that basis alone, Lavan runs out to greet this man, reflecting the same values as his sister, namely warm hospitality and a wish to be diligent in offering help to this someone whom Rivka has already assisted. And yet, many of our commentators, including Rashi, project upon Lavan questionable motivation in his behavior towards the servant. In response to the text reporting that Lavan ran to the servant, exactly the same action that Rivka took at the well when she gave the servant and his camels water, Rashi says, Vayarots Lavan, Lama Vayarots, Alma Rats, Vayhi Kirot et Hanezem, Amar Ashir Huze, Venatan Enav Bimamon. The text tells us that Lavan ran. Why did he run? Asks Rashi. The next verse begins, Vayhi Kirot et Hanezem. When he saw the nose ring, Lavan said to himself, this guy must be rich, and set his eyes on the wealth, and that is why he ran. In other words, even though the Torah tells us that Lavan ran to meet the man before he took note of the fine gifts that Avraham's servant bestowed upon Rivkah, our commentators were willing to accuse Lavan of being greedy, refusing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Indeed, the fact that the verse that follows the initial meeting of Lavan and the servants begins with the word Vayehi, it came to pass, this could just as easily separate the verse from the previous one than it could connect them as the commentators do. Why can't we read the text such that we give Lavan the benefit of the doubt and perceive his actions as meritorious and not as evil and diabolical? Sure, he's not the best father-in-law in the world to Yaakov later on in the chapters of Bereishit, but at this moment in time, can we not consider Lavan's words and deeds in the best possible light? If he was such an evil man, how do we explain the Torah texts reporting Lavan's next move? Vayomer, Lavan said, Bo, Beruch Adonai, Lama ta'amod bachutz, ve'anochi piniti habayit umakom lagmalim. Come in, O blessed of the Lord, he said. Why do you remain outside when I have made ready the house and a place for the camels? I challenge us all to find anything but God-loving enthusiasm and warm hospitality in Lavan's words. He saw that the servant was generous with his master's possessions and may have concluded that this representative was coming from a household where generosity was emphasized, which it was. Combine that observation with a detailed report from Rivka that the man asked for a place to stay and then went on to praise the Lord for his good fortune when he found out that Rivka was a relative of his master Avraham, and we can well understand Lavan's behavior as being appreciative and gracious every step of the way. What we have, I believe, is a wonderfully positive story about two respectful families who share common values and ethics, being blessed with good fortune in finding a match with Rivka and Yitzchak. When we give as many of the characters in this story the benefit of the doubt, the tale unfolds quite nicely, in contrast to many of the episodes in our Torah. Ephron wanted to be of service to Avraham in his moment of difficulty following the passing of his beloved Sarah, and the text can be read in such a way as to see Ephron's kindness and generosity emerging with each verse. Lavan also displayed kindness, generosity, and a willingness to extend himself and his family to Avraham's servant because that was the right thing to do, and not for any ulterior financial motive, in spite of the Midrashim, which wish to lead us to the opposite conclusion. We can certainly find reasons to be critical of the biblical characters, something that I personally am wont to do quite often. But if it's not warranted necessarily, what then? Would we not like to be given the benefit of the doubt by others, including the friends that we have made and the teachers that we have acquired? Then perhaps a good start to achieve that desiderata is to work on ourselves, to try to see the actions and hear the words of others first and foremost in as positive a light as we can, even when it seems almost impossible. It's worth a try. Yes?
Thank you, Rabbi Marcos. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.